everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks, the smiling Tom on the other side of the glass. And together we welcome you to the program on this Thursday. It is the 23rd of June, 2022. Tom, interesting, up at our place in the central foothills, we had a huge thunderstorm to the east that you could see, you know, just dark clouds, even a rainbow. And then to the west, we had another huge cloud. Here we were right in the middle, and we didn't get a drop of rain. So
it's over to the west, near the Twin Peaks of Marana, did you see that huge, that looked like a waterfall coming out of the sky?
Yes.
That was a downburst. I think that's what it's called. Yeah. Anyway, it caused some damage over in that area.
Yeah, you could just see it. It was just a huge, like a cloudburst that was happening. The Buckmaster Show, we are proud. We're in our 12th year here now, so we've got 11 and a half years with the radio show, and the radio show began after 22 years on Channel 6 on PBS, so that's, 34 years now here in the Tucson market. The Buckmaster Show, broadcasting from the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. Our radio station is 1030, Tucson's voice for trusted news talk, worldwide live listening at buckmastershow.com. And our live line, when we do our telephone interviews, which we will do at the bottom of the hour, are presented by our friends at Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. It's always a pleasure to welcome back to the show Dr. Albrecht Clausen, University Distinguished Professor at the U of A, Director of Outreach in the Department of German Studies. He has a broad range of research interests covering the history of medieval and early modern German and European literature and culture from about 800 to 1800, but he's also involved in contemporary literature, writing poetry and prose. He's published hundreds of scholarly articles and book citations, translations, textbooks, including a handbook on medieval studies. He's won many honors, including the Grand Knight Commander of the Most Noble Order of the Three Lions in recognition of outstanding services to German studies. He is the newest member of the five-member board for the Arizona Humanities. He's one of the board of directors. His latest book, and it's hard sometimes, Dr. Clausen, for me to keep track, is Wisdom from the Middle Ages. That's the latest book, which followed your book, which was very interesting, on incarceration and slavery in the Middle Ages and the early modern age. So I think I'm up to date, right, with your books, or do you have a new one?
There's a new one.
There's a new one.
It just came out, The Relevance of the Humanities, Medieval and Modern Perspectives.
Relevance of the Humanities. All right, maybe we can talk about that a little bit in the interview today. All right, stop the presses. Congratulations. This news... Really, you've been traveling, you were in Europe doing a bunch of speaking engagements, but you received news, I think, at the Los Angeles, at LAX
yesterday.
As part of your marathon trip home from Berlin, and traveling for almost 24 straight hours. But man, to receive the news, you are now a Fulbright Scholar. Congratulations. That's huge.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Bill, for this invitation and for the nice words. I appreciate that.
How does that work? A committee looks at, reviews your credentials and your bio, and then they make a decision.
That's right, yes.
And then they let you go ahead and do the project, and they fund basically the project over a period of time.
Yes, so they want to propose and promote really American scholarship in the world and help maybe spreading democracy and culture through the various cultural and scholarly work the various Fulbright scholars do.
Well, congratulations.
Thank
again.
So
that's a huge honor. All right, let's talk about the trip. You were speaking in many places. You were in Poland, right?
Yes, right.
And in Germany.
Yes, and Czech Republic.
And the Czech Republic. Mm-hmm. And different lectures. It was a wide variety of topics, right?
Yes, exactly right. Every time a different topic. Modern and medieval.
Modern and medieval. What were some of the topics?
For example, in Czech Republic, I gave a paper on anti-Semitism in other places like Göttingen. I talked about the meaning of world literature and how to do this. At other places like Bamberg in Germany, I talked about certain genre, literary genre in of Wrocław, that is old, previously Breslau. I talked about methods of historical research, so I addressed an historical audience. And also had papers on the notions of time as expressed in literary works. So a wide range of literary and historical cultural topics.
What about the war in the Ukraine? Is that a big topic in Europe right now? Or is it like here in the United States, it seems like it's now become a back page issue?
Well, it is a very...
Which is very unfortunate.
It's very unfortunate, and it's a burning issue, absolutely. I talk virtually everywhere with people, both in Poland and as well as in Czech Republic, in Germany, everywhere. And I saw so many different perspectives. It's sometimes hard to synthesize all of those, but yeah, I can share a lot about the situation right now. It's a very complex situation.
Why don't we begin? What can you tell our listeners?
Well, in both in Poland and the Czech Republic, there were very very clear positions as to the war is a threat to their existence. They were very worried about Russia, and they were the first ones to support Ukraine with their weapons. And there was virtually a kind of consensus about Ukraine needing its support. In Germany, it was a much more complex situation. And I heard the whole extreme from people who were...
From the extreme where people say in Germany, we just don't want to get involved, right?
Was that even further, Putin is right.
He is
right. The Ukrainians are occupied by Nazis, and they deserve to do this because NATO had occupied basically the Eastern Front. NATO is at fault. I mean, that was the extreme, really extreme, to the wide range of opinions. Oh, this is dangerous, or we are afraid of the nuclear weapons, or we are afraid of losing access to natural gas. There's a lot of worry.
Right.
But I think that is a lot of self-centered worries. My sense is it's a short-term thinking, selfish thinking, because they have become too dependent on Russia and suddenly realized that they made major mistakes the last 30, 40 years. Maybe. And now they have to restructure everything. There's a very important term coined by the German Chancellor Scholz, Zeitenwende, the change of times. But we don't see the change quite coming because they're so afraid of getting involved or worried that they could move too far ahead. At the same time, we all have seen the pictures. There's a horrendous war. It's a genocide.
Oh, no kidding. I mean, it's as bad as a World War II type war.
Slaughter. I mean, genocide.
Prisoners being executed. I mean, civilians lined up and shot.
Schools are shot. Hospitals are shot.
Nothing is off limits.
Nothing. Geneva Convention doesn't count anymore.
No, it does. I mean, this is unbelievable what's been going on over there.
Yeah.
And it's interesting to hear what you just heard over in Europe, because like Germany, and they're close to this, and they're all looking at like, oh my goodness, we've got the winter, next winter coming up.
Exactly.
Where are we going to get, how are we going to heat our homes?
Exactly.
Because the natural gas from Russia apparently is not coming. Maybe it will still be coming.
Well, the irony the Russians were just about to start delivering natural gas through Nord Stream 2 through the Baltic Sea, which was kind of irritating both for the Americans as well as Poles and Ukrainians, because they always made money through the transfer. But that pipeline has been shut down completely. I mean, several billion dollars are wasted right now. North Stream 1, they are now down to maybe 30%. So the Russians trying to cut that off. But the Germans are looking for alternatives, but the Poles are looking for alternatives. Lithuania is looking for alternatives. So the entire world market of energy is changing right now. and maybe to the better. I mean, we have relied too much on relatively cheap Russian oil
so
and gas.
So then you've got the Polish perspective. They're right there on the border, and that's different than the German perspective.
Very different.
Very different, right?
Absolutely, because they're bordering Ukraine, and they're always rightly afraid that the Russians might keep marching west. If they had defeated Kiev, what would they have done? I mean, they could have marched into Moldavia, which they really wanted to, and then maybe Slovakia to the east would have been open. Then why not take the Baltic countries? So a lot of very good reasons to be worried about.
Then we have your letter to the editor, the Arizona Daily Star. This was penned while you were over in Europe, and it was titled, I don't know if you came up with the title or maybe the Star did, Russian Hell on Ukraine. And you talk about the complacency with our ordinary lives here in the U.S. And as I kind of alluded to, this story is not a front page story very much anymore in the U.S. Well, I mean, it will be to the point when we talk about arms and are we sending arms. But inflation and gas prices seems to be all that Americans want to talk about right now.
That's right. And that's journalism, you know. And, there always has to be sensational and very up-to-date and most dramatic. But the situation I would actually parallel with World War One, 1914, big battles. And then for the next 3 years, just
stalemate,
terrible. With
you see that happening in Ukraine?
Absolutely, right now the Donbas and Luhansk
trench warfare.
In a way, because each city is used as a cover for each side. So they're trying to destroy each other, and we don't get the news anymore. It's tragic. It is really, I mean, people are dying. At least 500, 800 people are dying every day.
Oh.
It's horrendous.
Tom had a good question. He put this up on the screen. Let's see if we can take it before the break. Europe, are they reopening coal mines to fuel power plants? Have you heard about
that? Yes, absolutely. That is one idea, but not necessarily the best. They're also thinking about maybe reopening some of the nuclear power stations. But that's all very dangerous and very sort of triggering another thread because of environment, nuclear fallout, waste, and stuff like that. But they're trying to figure out all kinds of alternatives. I mean, the Secretary of Foreign Affairs in Germany, Habeck, he's traveling all over the world and trying to reach out to new deals. And I think they will achieve it. It's just a little bit hysteria and the high prices.
We will pause right here with Dr. Albrecht Clausen, who is newly minted Fulbright Scholar. That announcement coming down as he was traveling back from Europe yesterday. He got the news at LAX. That's kind of a nice way to get over jet lag, which you don't, you told me you don't suffer from jet lag, which is pretty darn fortunate considering the fact that you had a 24-hour travel day yesterday. And we appreciate you coming in today. So let's pause right here, talk about Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise, open 6:30. And they are open Tuesday through Sunday. Their website is monasdanishbakery.com. And stop by right now for lunch. They're serving lunch, but I think your biggest decision will be when you go in and look at the pastry case. Oh, my goodness. They all look, everything looks so good that it's hard to make a decision. We'll be right back with Dr. Clausen. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Delivering a $2 billion voter-approved regional transportation plan involves complex policy, legal, and financial matters. The Regional Transportation Authority is open to answering any questions you have about delivery of the current RTA 20-year plan or about the development of a new regional transportation plan for the next 20 years. Contact the RTA at info@rtamobility.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson. Tucson International Airport.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org. For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
All right, welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. A couple of shout-outs to a couple of great sponsors. First, Green Things. We love Green Things. They're located at 3384 East River Road by the Rito River. The 13-acre site is looking so good. They've got just such a wide variety of, well, everything green. And as we get ready now and transition into the summer rainy season, perfect time to go over to Green Things and do a makeover. For the garden. We all need it right about now after the very, very dry year. GreenThingsAZ.com and ZocaloVillage.com. Zocalo Village, some of those beautiful items from Mexico, like the Talavera pottery. All right. Also, we want to thank our friends over in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico, where we say on the Buckmaster Show, it will be cooler if you drive over to Silver City. It's about a three-hour drive, and the reason I give you that guarantee, the Buckmaster Show guarantee of 10 degrees cooler, because of the elevation, 5 to 7,000 feet. Look at that temperature right now, 83. That looks pretty darn good. Overnight lows in the lower 60s, right around 60. So that's almost perfect summer weather. Green Things and our friends in Silver City, great sponsors. For Silver City, the website to start your planning, southwestnewmexico.org. We continue now with the newly minted Fulbright Scholar, Dr. Albrecht Clausen, University Distinguished Professor, Director of Outreach in the Department of German Studies at the University of Arizona. He is a famed medievalist. That is his specialty, the Middle Ages, which Dr. Clausen, some would refer to the thousand-year period as, oh my goodness, that's the Dark Ages, from about 500 to, say, 1500s. Oh, nothing happened in that period, so let's just move on. But so much happened, and you've devoted your career to this particular area. That is your specialty.
Yeah.
And also, do you want to say a few words about Middle Ages before we talk about humanities?
Exactly. So 1,000 years, roughly, you have an incredible amount of architecture, of sophistication in medicine, in the arts, in literature, music, clothing, and so forth and so forth. But 1,000 years, there are many different stages and many different people, many different individuals. Some were barbaric, some were very wise and intelligent people. Others were artists, teachers, sailors, bankers, and so forth. If you look at some of the majestic medieval Gothic churches, and yes, they're still standing. I mean, how did they do this? We have no blueprint of from that time period, and they're just masterpieces, and they will stand for another 1,000 years.
Like the Cologne, Germany.
For example, right. Or Milan, or Salamanca, wherever you
go. How did they ever build those?
Well, they were simply much more intelligent than we assume. We are just sometimes really ignorant about the past. But we tend to do this always. Just go back 50 years and our grandparents. It was primitive.
Yeah, and
just
you never hear about like women's rights in the medieval period.
Yes, but at the same time, we discover increasingly that there were many powerful women, rulers, doctors. Yeah. Of course, there was patriarchy. No doubt about it that the rule, nominal rule by husbands and fathers and brothers, like in the Islamic world today. But in reality, it's a very different situation.
Yeah. Let's talk about humanities. You are on the board of the Arizona Humanities, and you just mentioned that your latest work that you've written about it has to do with humanities. We're just talking about the inhumane treatment of the war that's going on in Ukraine, and you know, executing civilians, bombing, raping going on. I mean, it's a mess. And then you have humanities, the word human.
Yes.
Yeah.
Unique, but we have both sides in us. And then that's the barbarity is always right there.
Yeah.
But also the idealism, maybe the divine and the devilish, if you will, in very simple terms. But it is our task, I think, as humanities scholars to help people understand really their tradition, their roots, our cultural background, our identity. And our identity is, of course, complex. That's the same today. I'm sure when people will look back to our time, they might have very different viewpoints. Because if you think about the 20th century, you have World War I, World War II, you have the nuclear bomb, Hiroshima and Nagasaki, you have the Vietnam War, the Korean War, and so on and so on. Is that not barbaric? Is that not dark?
Mm-hmm.
So in the Middle Ages, of course, you had lots of wars. But you hardly ever had really massive dead. So that is a very different situation. They had much more of an ethical code. They were not simply slaughtering each other. Rather, they were trying as knights to prove their superiority. There were lots of strategies to submit once you were defeated. Of course, there are lots of dead as well. But at the same time, many different negotiations, peace treaties, and attempts to overcome violence.
Humanities used to be a critical part of the academic scene. Has the influence lessened among college students? I mean, are they interested in the humanities?
On the one hand, I think our universities today are much more determined by money.
Yes.
So it's called the corporatization of the university. So the thinking goes very strongly. How can we graduate students so that they immediately get into big paying jobs? At the same time, the odd thing with the humanities is we have found out in the last 15 years or so that increasingly, particularly the American industry or economy, is hiring people from the humanities because many us CEOs, many of them, if not most, have a degree in history, philosophy, in Latin, in literature, in German literature, whatever it might be, because they learn thereby to be critical thinkers, culturally aware, open-minded, and creative.
Mm.
And that's exactly what the modern economy needs.
Mm-hmm.
So by doing culture work, we really help our society, essentially, I would say, really essentially, to handle all the problems and challenges.
Mm-hmm.
Because we are people, and as people, we have tasks to handle. You cannot simply take a scientist and say, okay, you solve that marriage problem. Okay, you are a chemist. Okay, you can solve philosophical issues, my fear of death.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do when you face death? Then all your money does not help. And that's when the humanities come in, and they provide answers from the past and the present.
One of your areas of interest is translations. That must be incredibly time-consuming. You translate works of literature and other things. You're working on a big project right now.
Recently, I did an 800-page book by a German scholar. It dealt with the corpse in the Middle Ages. And that was a massive work.
The corpse.
So, you know, what do you do when you have a dead knight and then, or the king, and maybe in the Mediterranean? What do? You need to carry the body back home across the Alps or so.
Who would have ever thought of that?
It is a fantastic study. It's one of the best studies at all. The corpse in the Middle Ages, and so relics, you know, and burial sites.
The Black Plague?
Also.
The Black Death? I mean,
but many, many different things. How were people buried? Where were they boiled? What did they do with the bones? What value did they have? Saints and dead saints, where were they buried? Who was buried? When did criminals, were they buried in cemeteries?
We're going to have you back to spend a half an hour talking about this, because it's something I just never really thought much about. The corpse in the Middle Ages.
That's right.
Was cremation a big deal? And I'm out of time.
Yes, it is one thing, but boiling was a big job. Yeah,
whoa.
Because you need to have the bones. Uh-huh. Bones are valuable.
Sure, yeah. Well, Dr. Claussen, always a pleasure. And again, congratulations on your Fulbright Scholar announcement and announcing it right here on the Buckmaster Show for the first time. So
thank you so much, Bill. It's an honor. Thank you so much.
We'll pause right here on the Buckmaster Show, take a break, and be right back.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
Are you searching for a sumptuous suite on the Italian Riviera, an exploration of the mighty Mississippi, or an indulgent spa in Cancun? Bon Voyage Travel will help you find exactly the vacation you're looking for anywhere in the world. With many cruises setting sail in over 1,100 hotels and resorts to choose from with our exclusive benefits, Bon Voyage Travel's experienced advisors are here to guide you every step of the way. Visit bvtravel.com or call 797-1110.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. And your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
And joining us on the live line, Jenny Flynn, President and CEO of the Southern The Community Foundation for Southern Arizona, working with a broad array of national and local partner foundations before Jenny joined the CFSA. She was at the University of Arizona Foundation and helped raise $100 million for the university and collaborated on significant initiatives, including building a talented management program and creating and executing a strategic plan to double fundraising. And as a volunteer leader and trustee and vice chair of the Women's Foundation of Southern Arizona, Jenny served as a champion for women and girls in Southern Arizona. In 2021, she supported the launch of the new Women and Girls of Color Fund to provide unrestricted financial support to nonprofit organizations run by and benefiting women and girls of color. And prior to her career as a fundraiser and foundation professional, she spent time in two parks that I have visited, and I think they're kind of the premier national parks, Denali National Park up in Alaska, and Jenny also was at Glacier National Park, and she joins us now on the live line. Jenny, how are you?
I'm doing very well, Bill. Thanks for that amazing introduction.
Well, you've got an amazing bio. I bet there are times during our hot weather here you would like to be up in Denali. We were up there in, a couple of years ago in late August, and it was like autumn had already come at Denali.
Oh, yeah, for sure. That you see the leaves changing.
Oh, it was really pretty.
Snow on the ground.
Yeah, and we had seen the big mountain like 50 miles away, but by the time we got to the park, the mountain had was not available, under the clouds. Anyway, let's talk about your new leadership position with the Community Foundation of Southern Arizona. Give our listeners kind of an overview of what CFSA is all about.
Sure. So CFSA is the Community Foundation for Southern Arizona is one of about 800 community foundations that exist in the United States. It's somewhat of a, they exist in other places in Mexico and in Canada, but it's very much a tradition of the United States for groups of donors to come together or community leaders to come together and say, we want to pool our philanthropy in order to support our communities. We want to support the needs of a community as those needs change over time. And it's sort of like a community chest that is available when a crisis hits or to help, seize opportunities to move the well-being of a community forward. The Community Foundation for Southern Arizona has been in place here for about 42 years. I'm the fourth full-time CEO leader, and each of these folks have stayed about a decade and have put their stamp on it. Clint Mabee, who preceded me, helped to build a beautiful community campus where we co-locate and have co-working space with a number of community nonprofits and provide a great collaborative experience for those groups as well as ourselves. So we're here to really help donors connect with causes they care about now and forever, and also to create a vibrant and equitable Southern Arizona community.
I've been over to that new campus for an event, and it really is nice. It's a very comfortable environment right off of Broadway, and the space available to nonprofits, it's really great what you guys are doing. The whole idea, Jenny, about community foundations, as you say, this particular one in Southern Arizona has been around for more than four decades. What was the thinking about why community foundations are important in this country?
Well, if you think about the way that the United States has operated, we have sort of this mix of federal and state and local governments. And I think the idea is that there's a business community, there's a government community at different levels, and then there's kind of this third sector, and that third sector is the nonprofit community. And we're here to strengthen our community, to fill in where maybe it doesn't make the most sense for either government or business to fill in, but in partnership and with mutual support. We are able to do things that can evolve quickly, and we're able to help donors who you know, we're very philanthropic people. We're givers in all different ways, whether it's through our churches or through community foundations, directly to other organizations. We can bring people together so that their giving has more impact. So if we join together, we're able to really tackle problems a little more head on. And so a community foundation is an organization that helps to look after the resiliency of a community over time. And so that's a role that we take really seriously. And here at the Community Foundation for Southern Arizona, you mentioned our campus. One of the main strategies we've employed is to support the nonprofit community of Southern Arizona, where we see those folks. As we strengthen those organizations, we extend our reach and the reach of donors who contribute through us many times over, because those organizations are in every rural community. They're in every corner of Pima County and Tucson. They serve every need. So by strengthening those organizations, we feel like we're creating a lot of resilience for overall for Southern Arizona.
Jenny, how has the nonprofit community survived the pandemic? And this kind of segues into my question about your 11 months now on the job, because you took over as CEO kind of in the middle of the pandemic. What has that experience been like?
Yeah, I would say one of the phrases that I repeat to myself often is context is everything. You know, so I came to the foundation at a unique time. It was 18 months into our community's lived COVID experience, as well as the racial reckoning that we've all experienced. And I think the thing that we also experience daily, which is a really deep distrust of institutions. So this is an unusual time to step into a leadership role like this. At the same time, what I've found is that I think because of all of that disruption, it's a time when many have been reflecting and engaging in renewal and reimagining of the way the world works and the role they want to play and the impact they want to have. And I've seen, for example, many of the donors who give through the Community Foundation are reflecting on their giving. If they usually give for the long term and only think about maybe giving after they pass away, some of them have said, no, I really want to have an impact now. And vice versa, I've seen quite a few people say, you know what, I've generally been giving now, but I really see the importance of having a long-term strategy for the sustainability of our community. So I'm actually going to think about giving to an endowment or give through my estate plan. So people are reflecting on that. And I would say resilience is also everything. So I've been really aware of how important it is to have resources before a crisis hits. So when COVID hit, we had luckily a community ready to pull together with some resources, with some experience from previous disasters. And this organization partnered with many others, including the city of Tucson, the county, and we were able to give away significant dollars. We listened to the nonprofit communities, the organizations, what they needed, and we organized really fast pivots and weekly grants for most of the early part of the COVID crisis. So we had volunteers and staff who would come in even in the middle of, when everything was basically closed, to make sure that on a weekly basis, as we assessed what's on fire, what is really needed right now, we are able to pivot and meet those needs quickly. And we get feedback from quite a few nonprofits that the aid that we were able to provide, as well as many others, kept many of those organizations from closing. And now we're trying to really think about how we allow that resilience to be something that continues on. And so we provide a lot of education to nonprofits and support to their leaders and their employees through something called the Center for Healthy Nonprofits, which is a capacity building and education program of the Community Foundation.
We're speaking with Jenny Flynn. She is and has been for the last 11 months the CEO of the Community Foundation for Southern Arizona. This is part of our CEO interview series once a month presented by Sun Corridor. Before we take a break, Jenny, what about economic development and the nonprofit community? A few of your thoughts on that.
Well, we certainly see that workforce development is a critical issue in our community. And I don't know if you happened to attend or any of your listeners did a recent event by the MAP Dashboard, which is something that the Eller College of Management at the University of Arizona, Community Foundation for Southern Arizona, and other partners sponsor. They held a really wonderful session on how education, business, and the nonprofit sectors can really help us with workforce development. We see a really strong need in that area for, and we see donors are very interested in it as well. So some of the folks who we work with who are particularly either education or business minded are very interested in supporting organizations that will allow, like JTED, will allow for a really direct education to go into careers, because, you know, there are many people who, for whom college is not the right choice, or they're pivoting in their careers to something else. So we see that nonprofits, whether they're educational institutions or those that provide wraparound support for folks who maybe need that with childcare, transportation costs, or other supports while they are going into new careers and hopefully get meet the needs of the businesses that are crying out, please send us workers who are trained and skilled and know what they're doing, that we find there's a real strong role for nonprofits to help kind of create that supported path for workers to get into great careers and for the businesses and other organizations to get the skilled workers that they need.
All right. We'll continue with our conversation with Jenny Flynn, the CEO of the Community Foundation for Southern Arizona. We'll take a break. It's the Buckmaster Show. You're listening to our CEO monthly interview series presented by Sun Corridor, Inc. Be right back.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the Doubletree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com.
Hello, I'm Danette Bewley, CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority. At Tucson International Airport, we're nonstop supporting jobs and prosperity as an economic engine for our entire region. From an innovative and touchless passenger experience to earning the GBAC Star Accreditation, the golden standard for cleanliness, our team is ready to welcome you back to Tucson International Airport. Begin your journey with us. We're nonstop for you, Southern Arizona.
Delivering a $2 billion voter-approved regional transportation plan involves complex policy, legal, and financial matters. The Regional Transportation Authority is open to answering any questions you have about delivery of the current RTA 20-year plan or about the development of a new regional transportation plan for the next 20 years. Contact the RTA at info@rtamobility.com.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in Southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in Southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, and we continue now with our CEO interview series presented by Sun Corridor, Inc., the Tucson region's main economic development group, and we're talking with the Community Foundation of Southern Arizona CEO Jenny Flynn. And Jenny, before the break, we were talking about workforce development, and Sun Corridor, as you know, put out that pivot playbook kind of at the height of the pandemic a year or so ago, just as you were taking over as CEO at CFSA. And workforce development was certainly one of the five major areas to help our region kind of redefine its economy in the post-COVID world. And you have to wonder how the nonprofit community, which is very strong, we have a lot of nonprofits, how they will play into that future of the post-COVID world.
Well, I would say, there's a really strong economic impact of the nonprofit sector that's very surprising to people. The last statistic I saw, the nonprofit sector in Southern Arizona had as much economic impact as the construction industry.
Really?
So I think people are extremely surprised to realize that you're right, it is a strong sector. And you know, Tucson's one of those places that is well known for having a large number of nonprofits and a very vibrant nonprofit community. So I think it's really important for nonprofits to be at the table when we're looking at economic development. And I'm very grateful to Sun Corridor. I'm on the group, and I appreciate that I'm able to represent the nonprofit community. I will say, coming out of the various kind of multi-layered crises that I talked about, I think it's important for us to also think about how we strengthen the health of the nonprofit community in order for it to play that pivotal role in not only economic development in our region, but also quality of life. I mean, a lot of the things that make this a special place and make this a place we really love and want to live is a result of the work of nonprofits. So if you think about all of the arts organizations, some of the organizations that make sure that we have, great educational programming for children and adults, and that we have, beautiful settings like Tohono O'Toole. There are many organizations that are available to us as a way of making our region special, that I think it's important that we think about those organizations and how we can make sure that they survive and thrive. And I do think out of the pandemic, there are a few critical issues that I really would like for your listeners to bear in mind for the nonprofit community, and those are uncertainty, inequity, and leadership. So we really see a lot of uncertainty, and all of us are facing a lot of uncertainty in this time, but for nonprofits, we have the same workforce shortages that are in the for-profit sector, but we can't pass costs along to consumers and clients and customers. So that means we have a little bit more of a struggle to think about how to raise salaries or in other ways make a nonprofit career appealing to talented individuals. There's a lot going on in our revenue models. I'm sure many of us have been to fundraising events. Well, events are a little bit iffy. Sometimes they happen, sometimes they don't. So that source of revenue for a lot of our organizations is much more uncertain than it used to be. And in terms of the second area where I think we really need to consider how we keep our sector strong in inequity, we find that many organizations continue to not only really suffer from the Great Resignation and the fact that COVID really hit these organizations hard in their revenue models, but we have found that nonprofits that are small, startups, or just have low budgets, maybe have been operating kind of at the edge, and those in rural communities in particular got very hard hit by the uncertainty and challenges of the last few years, and they typically are going to need a lot of extra support to survive and continue to serve the communities in which they are located. And then combined with all of these uncertainties and contained sort of within them is my third kind of bucket of support that I think we need to provide for nonprofits, and that's around leadership. We find that the need for skilled and strategic board leadership and dedicated program volunteers is really critical. It's honestly a crisis in leadership. So if you think about the Great Resignation that we hear so much about, that hits nonprofits just like for-profits. CEOs, many of them retired. We had sort of a generational turnover that was exacerbated and sped up. And then a lot of volunteers fell off during COVID and haven't returned. So in order to strengthen our nonprofit sector, I think we have to address all three of those, uncertainty, inequity, and leadership. And then that sector is positioned to continue to develop our economy and to create a wonderful quality of life that we all enjoy.
And I was also thinking, Jenny, about the work at home and how that has changed perhaps the way people think about nonprofits and giving. Because if you're in an office setting, you know, you're over the water cooler or whatever, people talk and they say, oh, you know, I support this organization. There isn't that personal communication right now going on at the office.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And people tend to, you know, there's a lot of sort of positive social pressure in giving. So, you know, you hear so-and-so did this and you think, oh, you know, my office mate did that. I want to follow up. What's that all about? And we find the same challenges happening around volunteering because that's also something that office mates would do together or that would spread through social networks. And that's, a lot of that's been disrupted.
Do you want to talk a little bit before we go about how our listeners can get involved with volunteer opportunities and other things?
Oh, absolutely. I would love to. So I really invite them to. There's just this amazing array of nonprofit organizations that would love your involvement, whether that's your time, your treasure in the form of gifts, your talent, your testimony in terms of your stories, your ties and networks, or you know, a truth that you may have to share with them about your experiences. So we do have a list of organizations actively looking for new board leadership at our website at cfsaz.org, and that's a great place to start. You can also just call a nonprofit that your favorite nonprofit and you know, ask them about it or check their websites out. We have also been doing here at Community Foundation for Southern Arizona, we've done it twice and it's been very popular and we'll keep doing it, is an event called Board Connect. And we'll do another one in October. And we will bring in nonprofit organizations looking for volunteers, and then we'll bring in potential volunteers. We've partnered with Greater Tucson Leadership and Tucson Young Professionals so far. Happy to expand that. And we've done, the first one was sort of a speed dating format, and the second one was an NFL draft format. So they're fun, lighthearted events, but we've had a really great response to that. It's kind of a low pressure way to meet and mingle with organizations you might want to volunteer with. So with regards to financial support, I'm sure many of your listeners are aware, but I want to really point out that Arizona offers several tax credit options that allow you to support nonprofits providing critical services. And then you get a dollar-for-dollar discount credit on your taxes. So essentially, you're directing your state tax dollars to a nonprofit. So that's a really great program through the Arizona Department of Revenue. And then if you're passionate about environmental causes, we recently took this beautiful campus solar through the help of one of our donors. And additionally, we're providing solar grants to other nonprofits in the community as part of our Environmental Sustainability Fund. And we certainly invite people, if they want to get involved with that, to check out our website. And we have a matching gift program, so the first $100,000 will be matched. And we would love for more people to be engaged.
All right, Jenny Flynn, lots of information there, CEO of Community Foundation for Southern Arizona. This month's contributor to our CEO interview series presented by Sun Corridor. It's suncorridorinc.com. That's their website. And Jenny, before we go, quickly, your website again?
Absolutely. It's cfsaz.org.
Jenny, thank you very much. Have a great afternoon.
Thank you so much. Thanks to you listeners, too. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye. All right. That's going to do it for the Buckmaster Show. On behalf of Mr. Tom Fairbanks, engineering and producing the show, I'm Bill Buckmaster.